This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone. So let's move from our convulsing planet to our convoluted brains, roughly 3 pounds of mostly fat with water, proteins, carbs, and salt, the seat of ourselves, no one like any other, each defined by memory. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that memory was the matrix in which all other faculties are embedded, and that without it, all life and thought were just an unrelated succession. That was, of course, before dementia stole Emerson's self away. Millions of Americans live with Alzheimer's, a disease that robs patients of their memories and ultimately erases selfhood even as they live and breathe, a disease that still defies science after decades of dogged research. But in 2016, a full century after the disease was first described, scientists made what was hailed as a groundbreaking advancement.
Beta amyloids are typically found in the brain and have been known to be linked to Alzheimer's.
Abnormally configured proteins that are long and sticky.
The brain lights up with amyloid plaque, suggesting a high likelihood of Alzheimer's disease.
Since then, the paper has been cited over 2,000 times in other studies. It sparked a massive revival of research into the amyloid beta protein, kindling long-deferred hopes of a cure.
Lisa is taking an experimental new drug, one that blocks amyloid formation. It's one of 50 drugs being tested in over 100 clinical trials nationwide.
Late last month, a whistleblower pointed out potential flaws in that groundbreaking 2006 paper. It all started when two prominent neuroscientists believed that some of the evidence related to an experimental Alzheimer's drug called Simuflim by the biotech firm Cassava Sciences may have been, quote, fraudulent. The neuroscientists, by the way, were also short sellers betting against Cassava and who, through their own attorney, retained the services of an expert in the field. That expert was Michael Schrag, a board-certified vascular neurologist and assistant professor of neurology at Vanderbilt University Medical Center, who was paid $18,000 to investigate Simuflam. He compiled a dossier of his findings, which included apparently dubious images related to the drug from dozens of journal articles. A petition was filed with the FDA to stop production of the drug. The FDA rejected the petition. Schrag also submitted his findings to the National Institutes of Health, which had invested tens of millions of dollars in the research. Cassava Sciences denies any misconduct. After completing his work on cassava, Schrag then turned his attention to the 2006 paper.
Well, just to be clear, Schrag does not state that his work is definitive. He does not say that fraud occurred, nor do I. What he does is he points to red flags.
Charles Piller writes investigative stories for Science. His latest is Blots on a Field, which he wrote after a six-month investigation, which he says offers strong support for Schrag's suspicions.
He points to image after image and paper after paper where there are apparent signs of image manipulation. And it's sometimes unclear why, but what sometimes occurs is that people who conduct these complicated experiments are believing that their hypothesis is correct. They should see certain results in the images. And if they're not getting those results, a motive might be to change the images so that they reflect the hypothesis.
That doesn't sound very scientific.
No. Fortunately, this kind of manipulation is not common in science, but it clearly occurs. And there's case after case of it that has been identified in other circumstances. Now, Schrag created this 100-page dossier involving 34 different papers, either by Cassava Sciences people or by scientists who were related to the company in various ways. Mm-hmm. And he presented to the NIH because he said, look, this is potentially important. It's a potentially compelling argument that scientific misconduct might have occurred. And it's your responsibility to look at this more carefully. And indeed, certain investigations are underway, including one at the City University of New York, where one of the main players in the cassava story is based.
Let's talk about the images now. I love what they're called, Western blots. Apparently, it's a way of displaying different proteins in a sample. Basically, you get a sample, you kind of grind it up, you put it through a device that pushes proteins through a gel using an electrical current, right?
Brooke, that is an excellent and correct description.
I think that's because you told that to our producer. Anyway, so take it from there. How is this stuff manipulated?
Western blots, they look kind of like stacked blobs, stacked bands, you might call it. And the different bands within a blot represent different kinds of proteins. So it's very important to the experiment that the correct information is in these blots because it can make or break a hypothesis about what is associated with something like Alzheimer's disease. So the way in which they can be manipulated is through digital tools. Now, there's, of course, the old trusty Photoshop, and there's also other digital tools that are actually distributed by the National Institutes of Health that are similar, more oriented towards scientific purposes. These tools can be used to pretty up an image. It's pretty accepted in the scientific community that they usually use partial images. They cut out elements and they show these as evidence of a certain finding. And it's perfectly permissible to do that. The journals only have so much real estate in their pages. And if you showed the entire image for every experimental finding, you might fill up a whole paper with them. Mm-hmm. So that's acceptable. What is not acceptable and what is considered possible misconduct is altering what's actually in the image or greatly enhancing or changing the contrast in a way that you can't really see what's going on clearly, and then representing the image in a way scientifically that the experiment actually doesn't support.
So Matthew Schrag didn't explicitly say that any image in the data was doctored, but he did raise a lot of red flags. So how did that work lead him back to that 2006 landmark paper in Nature?
There's a really interesting online forum for scientists called PubPeer. And this website is a place where scientists, when they see things in studies that look funny to them, either images that don't look right or data that doesn't look right, they post a comment up on PubPeer and essentially ask the authors of the study, am I misinterpreting this? Is there something here that you want to share that can elucidate why this doesn't look right? Is there more to the story? And the reason that Schrag was looking on PubPeer is that he was constantly trying to refine his how to look at these images, how to understand them. So he did a search for Alzheimer's on this site, PubPeer. Then he noticed that there were two or three studies popping up by a guy at the University of Minnesota by the name of Sylvain Lesny. So he took a look at them and he saw what was being claimed as alleged manipulations of Western blot images. He then looked at the original papers themselves and saw other images that also looked, to him, very suspect. And using his digital tools, he seemed to be able to show support for the idea that they were also manipulated. And then he did a broader search of papers by Lesny, and he ran across this 2006 Nature paper that he immediately realized was extremely important because it had been cited by thousands of other studies. And lo and behold, image after image after image showed serious signs of image doctoring.
I gotta ask, how is it in the 16 years since that paper, that landmark paper, appeared in Nature, no one else suspected that something might be wrong?
Yeah, it's a puzzle. There's an enormous amount of complacency in this realm. There's an enormous amount of lack of due diligence by journals to seriously check images for possible fakery. I think journals are doing more today, way more than they did in 2006. But still, the tools to do this were available back in 2006, and it's not rocket science. It is something that people can learn to do, even if they don't have expertise in the field of study. So the journals haven't done a good job.
What about the fellow scientists?
That's the part that is the most troubling to me. Lesney's close colleague in the 2006 paper is a scientist by the name of Karen Ash, who's an eminent, highly regarded expert in Alzheimer's disease and has made major contributions to the field. She was the senior author in the 2006 paper, and in essence, she had to certify that the results were correct and that she had reviewed the data carefully. It's pretty obvious that she didn't put it through enough of a rigorous review. She now believes that there is a high amount of likelihood or credibility that Lesney may have manipulated those images. She said so in the press a number of times since my articles appeared. She says it's lamentable that it might have happened that way, but still, strangely, doesn't take any responsibility and doesn't believe that it had any impact on the findings of the paper, which I think to people who have evaluated the paper considered to be pretty bizarre, because we're talking about 6 or 7 images in that paper alone that strike at the heart of their hypothesis.
You quoted a neuroscientist at Stanford University, his Nobel laureate, Thomas Sudhoff, who is an Alzheimer's expert, and he said, "The immediate obvious damage is wasted NIH funding and wasted thinking in the field, because people are using these results as a starting point for their own experiments."
I think the question is opportunity costs. So really what happened with this paper is that at a moment when skepticism was rising about the ideas associated with the amyloid hypothesis, this paper gave people hope and belief that they were on the right track. And this paper supercharged NIH funding and corporate funding for drug development. What's so troubling is that other hypotheses, other possible causes of Alzheimer's have been starved for funding during the same period. And the dominance of the amyloid hypothesis has been such that money continues to flow to it, despite the decades of failure to turn it into therapeutic remedies for Alzheimer's disease.
I just wonder, where does this leave Alzheimer's research, this terrifying annihilation of the self? We've been led down so many rosy paths, only to see nothing much at the end except failure and disappointment. What should the average listener take from it?
I think it's important to understand that this set of problems was outed by an Alzheimer's scientist. There is an element of self-correction in the field. A lot of people in the field feel a deep responsibility to do the kind of due diligence that Matthew Schrag did. So that's message number one. The second is that this is a human endeavor. There are mistakes made, and there's even corruption at times in any endeavor, including science. But the vast majority of the work that's being done is faithful to scientific integrity. It's these exceptions, these apparently big examples of possible misconduct, that give the field an opportunity to look into the mirror. Why did they allow this to happen? What systems can be put into place to prevent this sort of breakdown from happening in the future? Unfortunately, there's a lot of people in the field who have staked their careers on the importance of following through on the amyloid hypothesis, who have been discounting the significance of this problem. In essence, saying, well, it's lamentable that someone might have altered images and experiments, but it really doesn't matter. Everything is fine. And I think that rings hollow with the public and generates the sort of backlash from people who feel they have reason to be skeptical of the scientific community and the public health community, for that matter.
Charles, you did an important thing with that Science Magazine piece. It was long, it was deep. It was fair. Do you ever feel any ambivalence about it? I mean, about your work as a necessary and essential buzzkill?
Brooke, I think about that all the time. I really feel concerned that when I put out a story like this and it's picked up by the likes of Tucker Carlson and some of the other right-wing media, it's used as an opportunity to say, okay, if this one set of studies was falsified, that means all the research is completely fake. The scientific enterprise can't be trusted. And even though I abhor that, I don't really feel I have any other alternative but to do the work that I do. I mean, let's face it, the only way that the scientific community can maintain or increase its credibility with the public is to be honest when mistakes are made or when corruption is found.
As you've said, you can't do good work if you're standing on the shoulders of corrupt evidence.
Research, when it's most effective, is replacing outdated assumptions, and it's replacing them with new mysteries. It leads to all manner of breakthroughs. And that's why uncovering problems in the field, correcting them, is essential to the process.
Charles, thank you very much.
Thank you, Brooke.
Charles Piller is an investigative reporter for Science and author of the recent report, Blots on a Field? A neuroscience image sleuth finds signs of fabrication in scores of Alzheimer's articles, threatening a reigning theory of the disease. Coming up, what our bodies, our planet, and our cosmos have in common. This is On the Media.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.